Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barriff, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. Welcome back, and today we continue a series of very special episodes, 15 interviews of student-centered educators brought to us by guest producers. You're about to hear from Reed Fraser, a graduate student at Providence College pursuing a Master's of Education in Urban Teaching and her middle school mathematics certification. She interviews Dr. Anthony Rodriguez, a professor at Providence College in the Department of Elementary and Special Education, whose areas of expertise are special ed, math education, and community-based instruction. This is Dr. Rodriguez's second time on the Student Centered Learning Podcast, and enjoy this wonderful interview.
I'm here with Dr. Rodriguez to talk about student-centered learning and personalized learning in particular. So welcome, Dr. Rodriguez.
Thank you.
So do you want to share a little bit about how you've done personalized learning, maybe project-based learning in particular?
Sure. Yeah, I spent 13 years in New Mexico working on mainly project-based learning. But I think after my second year in the classroom, I started personalizing the classroom to the students that I taught. And I think I ended up getting a lot of different students at different levels, so it was very hard to stick with one curriculum to begin with, stick with one book, stick with one whatever. So I found it was actually taking up more time to adapt the book to the students instead of just taking the standards and then writing curriculum that met the needs of the students.
So I've had class with you, and you gave us this great resource. So it was the Project-Based Learning Starter Kit from Buck Institute for Learning.
Yeah,
and in that it discusses like driving questions and the importance of coming up with the driving questions. Do you want to touch on how you've come up with driving questions with your classes and the process of doing that?
Yeah, that's the hardest part in project-based learning is try to find something that's meaningful enough to your students that they'll put in the work that you want them to. Because at the end of the day, you want them to just be working really, really hard. And if you can meet them halfway and get them to do something that they want to do, you know, they will. They'll work hard for you. So it's important with a few of them. Like in New Mexico, a lot of the culture around, especially the Rio Grande Valley, is farming. And in the area of town that I worked in, it's no longer a farm, it's no longer a ranch, no longer any of those things. But a lot of the grandparents of my students did. They farmed that valley until they built it up and it became, you know, a pretty urban area. So what I did is I basically, you know, took them back to their, you know, grandparents, great-grandparents' days of farming land and you know, trying to make a business out of our greenhouse, our composting company, our, you know, plant sales, all the different partnerships we had with businesses, and eventually Intel, you know, found out about what we were doing and backed us and gave us a grant. But it was cool to have not only the students want to do stuff that their grandparents talked about, because they would hear all these stories and all these, you know, things about back in the old days when they would do this, and it was cool that they could say, yep, I'm doing exactly what my grandparents did. And then their grandparents also would come by the greenhouse and say, all right, you know, this is going well or this is not going well, and would critique what we were doing. So it was pretty cool that way. And it's a great way to learn, you know, basic algebra, basic geometry.
Yeah, so like the application of the math and the community aspect of having students see value in what they're learning. Mm-hmm. Did you see any particular like situations where you noticed that students were more engaged in the math, like any... just because it meant something to them and it was meaningful?
Yeah, they became really proud of their work, both in the greenhouse and then a lot of the problems that they solved, I think they knew at a deeper level because they saw it and they worked with their hands. They could see what a three-dimensional object looked like and they could, you know, estimate, you know, especially with compost, where compost reduces at a certain rate and compost heats up at a certain rate and then cools down at a certain rate. And they were taking those measurements every single day with this giant, you know, 3 foot long, you know, compost thermometer. That was and we'd have to chart it out and figure out and estimate, you know, what the temperature was going to be like tomorrow based on the size of the pile. And I think it was a really interesting thing on a daily basis. Like, okay, what's the temperature today? You know, is it hot enough to burn your hand, or is it, you know, cooling down? Because some of those days, like, they were like, oh no, it's going to be fine. It's like 160 degrees in there, and that hurts. Yeah. A little bit.
Definitely. So going off of that, so there's value in student choice. So mm-hmm. how did you come up with certain projects for project-based learning that was a student choice and you saw the benches? How did that come about?
Oh, that came about because of, oh, wow. That came out because of the contractor for the school. So we got a brand new school, which the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they get new schools every certain amount of time. We hired a contractor, they built the school, and they were supposed to build baseball field, soccer field, all these, stands and benches for the kids to sit on, like a normal dugout, and, you know, buffalo grass, which is different. You don't have to water it as much. It's pretty drought resistant. They did none of those things. They basically built the building. It looked great from the outside, but on the inside, a lot of things were missing. A lot of the small details they decided they weren't going to do. So when the students went out to play at recess, you know, they were literally sitting in the dirt. They were sitting, they literally tipped, trash cans on their side and sat on them to watch the kickball game. And I did, I asked them, I said, if there's one thing about this school, you know, what's one thing that you guys, you know, would want changed? And they did. They said, we have nowhere to sit. And I was out there one day. I'm like, yeah, you guys are sitting on a garbage can. And then we'd have to pick up the trash because when you tip that thing over, some of the trash comes out and you have to put the trash in. And if it was windy, then the trash is flying all over the place. And in New Mexico, especially in March, like this time, it's 50, 70 mile an hour wind. So it just went all over the place. So that was their, choice. And I even asked them, I said, go on to your parents, say, what would you like better at the school? And their parents were like, yeah, that's not really a baseball field.
So it benefited the community,
yeah.
Not just the students and learning, so the community as a whole.
Yeah, I still get updates. I still get, every once in a while, I get a text saying, yeah, I was out there. They're still hanging up. They need another, coat of, but.
So do you have any tips or pointers for teachers that might be reluctant to try project-based learning in their own classroom and how to connect to the content standards that they have to cover?
I would do one. Just one. Just beginning of the year, just say, I'm going to do one in March. I wouldn't do one in March, actually. I would do one after the testing. Because I think the number one thing is you have to acknowledge the anxiety of a teacher and the pressure of a teacher. And I would say once that standardized test is over and they've, fulfilled all the things that the principal expects of them and whatever that is, have them do maybe a 2 to 3 week project-based learning activity in May.
So start small.
Start small, absolutely, and see how it goes. And, I think 2-3 weeks will be good enough to at least see some results.
So would there be any tips for, connecting the content standards to the project that is?
Yeah. So I think in the driving question part, where they're brainstorming about what matters to them and what they want to change, I would have that as a separate day. So have them do that for their, their 45 minutes or whatever that is. Have them come up with a detailed idea of what they want to do and maybe have that done on a Friday. So the teacher can think over the weekend on, how to connect to the Common Core over the weekend. Because once you've done it a while, you can connect, literally as they're doing it, you can say, okay, that looks like this standard, that looks like that standard, that looks like this. But since they're not used to doing that, they're going to need some time to literally go home, look at the piece of paper of all the different ideas the kids did, and then they can look at the standards they need to teach and say, okay, out of all these 5 things, this one might be the one that we do. Ideally, you want the class to pick from the 5, but I think if you're starting out, you might take their ideas and then you pick from the 5 that they give you, just because you want to make it accessible for the teacher, because the teacher is the one that slows the things down. If they don't feel comfortable doing it, the students won't have a good time with it.
And so one point about project-based learning that I find really important is reflection and feedback. So what ways did you use reflection in any of the project-based learning?
I always brought out community members, and I always brought out experts. So with the building of the benches, I brought out carpenters, and I brought out actual Bureau of Indian Affairs officials that would come out who built the school. And I would say, so our first one before the benches, we did a we tried to, because there's some really cool angles. The way the building's built is, if you look at it from a bird's eye view, it's some really cool angles, really cool shapes. And I had the students measure all the interior and the exterior angles of the building and then build a blueprint. And I had actually the person who drew the original blueprint from BIA headquarters in Albuquerque come out and look at their blueprints and judge them based on how close to the angles were exact and how, you know, close to the original blueprint it was. And that gives students like real feedback, like, oh, this guy's an expert. Like, you need an expert to be able to get them to believe. Because after a while as a teacher, they think, oh, yeah, the guy just likes me. Like, you know, this might be a good project, might not be a good project. But you get an expert, and they're giving you real feedback. And then I would train the person who's giving feedback. I say, okay, give them no more than three negatives and no, you know, three positives. Like, try to balance your feedback back so the kids don't get crushed, but they get, you know, good stuff. So
specific points to reflect mm-hmm. on and to,
absolutely.
And positives too. Nice, I like that. So also, is there any particular moment or situation in your teaching that you were like, I need to turn to projects and project-based learning in particular?
I think actually my first project-based learning was we were mapping the world. I was teaching a self-contained, emotionally disturbed, like district-wide program in Albuquerque, and we didn't have the luxury of just being able to specialize. So I not only taught math, I also taught social studies, language arts, and I did social skills, and I also did like job placement for my students. And I noticed they had no idea like where anything was outside of Albuquerque and maybe Santa Fe, but they thought Santa Fe was really far away and it's only 45 miles. And they okay. thought it was like, oh, we'd never go to Santa Fe. Like, that's just, you know. And I'm like, have you been in the mountains? They're like, no. So it's like classic like city experience. So when we were talking about like, what's your neighboring states? They were like, oh yeah, like California. I'm like, kind of, but Arizona's in the way. And you know, how far is New York? Like, I don't know. So we started just like proportionally mapping like where things were and how far away certain things were. And we had this wall and we did a mural. And at first we did the United States and we mapped that out. We drew that out and then we connected all the different, you know, we basically got around the world. And I think that helped them in two ways. It helped them understand that there's a bigger world out there than Albuquerque, which I think when you're in the city your whole life and you don't have a lot of resources to get out of the city and go on vacations, like that's your world and that's all there is. And I think it's important to know that there's another world out there for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's actually pretty funny that you bring that up because we were the school I'm at right now, that we were doing scientific notation and the distance between different states and different cities, and students are like, oh, where's that? Like, and just like, it's interesting. They were learning not only the math, but other important stuff too. So,
yeah. Yeah. Even space, like how many miles is this? How many miles is that? And they were, after a while they could almost estimate based on the map, how far away Denver was, how far away, you know, Tucson was, how far away, you know, LA was. And it was, and then they started thinking like, man, I could like drive to LA. I'm like, yeah, in like 12 hours you'll be there, no problem, you know, no big deal. And for a person in the Northeast, you're like, 12 hours, that's crazy. You're gonna hit traffic. Like, you hit no traffic. Like, literally, you get on the highway in Albuquerque, you hit traffic until you get like a little bit outside of, I don't know, Bakersfield maybe. And that's, I wouldn't even say that. I'd say you, when you get Riverside maybe, which is right next to LA. So you're 11 hours, zero traffic, 85 miles an hour, and then 1 hour of traffic, which you don't even have to do if you do a different, you know, different route. Here, you try to get to D.C. and you're hitting traffic, you know, all over the place, just leaving Providence.
Yeah. So I recently was listening to a webinar, and it brought up the three R's and yep. project-based learning, so rigor, relevance, and relationships. Do you want to maybe briefly touch on each of the three R's to wrap it up?
Sure. Yeah, maybe start with relationships. I think relationships, so many students struggle with interpersonal communication. So many students struggle because they're just stuck on their phone. I mean, they'll rather text their friend at, like, who's 5 feet away than actually have the conversation with the kid 5 feet away. And project-based learning forces you to sit in a group and problem solve. And you can't get out of that work until you have the problem solved. So it forces them to, like, negotiate and to listen to others. And there's so few times at school where you can have those deep conversations and work on interpersonal skills. Relevance, it's built in. It's just, it's their real life. It's what matters to them. And it's not what matters to me as a teacher. So it takes a lot of weight off of me as far as building relevance into it. But I have to be open. I have to be open-minded, and I have to, you know, try to see their project as being something important when maybe I might look at it and that doesn't sound like, you know, there's any relevance here, but chances are there is. And the rigor, as long as you're tying that to the Common Core, you're fine. Easy. It's not. If you know your standards at a deep level, you can connect pretty much any project-based learning activity to math in some way. There's always some math in there. It's just you have to find it. And that supports the whole thing. If you don't have rigor, you are just doing, like, dioramas, which are nice, but you know, chances are you don't learn a whole lot from them.
So the 3 R's are built right into project.
They are, absolutely, yeah.
So thank you for sharing your experiences with personalized learning.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you again for listening to the Student Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at STUCNTR Podcast. And remember, students learn deeply when they are at the center.